So we are holding about the middle of Memzayin Amidalis by the two dots, Loihoyer Kovrin, about eight lines from the end of the narrow lines. Okay, the Mishnah had said that the Mishnah had said that when it comes to somebody who's been executed by Beis Din, we don't bury them in their family plot. Instead, we have two plots that are set aside that Beis Din has, one for people who got Skila and Srefa, the other people for people who got Hedeg and Fenech. So the question is, why should that have to be the case? Why, Taka, don't we bury them with their family? The reason is, because you don't bury a Rasha next to a Tzadik. Now, the guy has been executed by Beis Din, and that's he's not a total Rasha anymore, especially he had his first stage of Kapara, but as Gemara is going to say later, he has several stages, he goes through several stages of his Kapara before he can be called a Tzadik. Ultimately, Va'amich call him Tzadikim, all the Jewish people are Tzadikim, and he has a Chelek Lelem Abav once he says his Vidui. But fine, it still takes a while for him to be considered a Tzadik.
But
nevertheless, it still takes time for his Kapara to be accomplished. So we'll see, there's going to be several stages he has to go through. We'll see. Later on in the sugya, when we talk about the concept mes mitoch rishon, that the guy dies still a rasha. So the various mepharshim bring up the point: he's not a total rasha. He said vidui beforehand. So there's a couple of different answers. One of them being that yes, fine, he said vidui, but we don't know how sincere his vidui was. The Eibishter knows, fine. So the Eibishter can give him a chelek leilam haba. Doesn't necessarily mean that we shouldn't treat him down here on earth like a Rasha. That's the Minchas Chinuch says something along those lines. The Yad Ramah says something slightly differently. It means that la'asid lavo, he'll have his place in Elam Haba. But meanwhile, up until that point, until he goes through the various stages that the Gemara is going to go through as we go through the Sugya, up until finally that his body decays, up until then, you still have to consider him a Rasha. So, the Omer of Achavachin, Minayin Shein Kovrin Rasha Etzel Tzadik, how, Taka, do we know that you don't bury a Rasha next to a Tzadik? Shenema, because you have a Pasuk like this. Now, the Pasuk describes Elisha Novi passes away, and afterwards there's a period over there when regular groups of armed bandits from Moab are invading Eretz Yisrael. So every so often they'd attack people. So Vayihi Heim Kovrim Ish, it happened once that some people were burying somebody. Vayihi Ro was like good, and they saw such a gang of Moabim coming to attack. So they ran away. Gdud means like a troop. Yeah, a troop of soldiers, like it. God Gdud Yugudena, yeah. Vayashlichu was the Ish Pekever Elisha. So they threw the body into the grave of Elisha. The man's body touched the bones of Elisha, the body of Elisha, and he woke back up, and he stood back up on his feet. Now, what's the point?
The
point being, in other words, now who was this guy? Rashi says that actually it was the same Navi Sheker who we find earlier in Sefer Melachim, the one who convinced the true Navi Idoi to eat by him, even though he wasn't supposed to, and the true Navi Idoi ended up getting killed by a lion as a punishment for that. So this was that same Navi Sheker, Rashi says. So therefore, he was a Rasha. So why did he all of a sudden revive when he touched? Because a Rasha like him shouldn't be buried next to the Tzaddik Elisha. Now,
they should not.
That's the point. Therefore, we learn that.
That's why he revived.
By the way, I mean, Marsha and other Mephoshim talk about the fact is, later on also in Malachim, we find that in the end, this particular Navi Sheker ended up being buried next to Idoi, after all, next to that true Navi who had misled. So how are you talking? Why did he get buried next to the Tzaddik Idoi? So Marsha says, on the basis of what we're going to have later on in the Gemara, that eventually once the flesh is decayed and all that's left is the bones, then at that point you can't call the guy such a Rasha anymore. So then fine, he's still a Rasha compared to the Tzaddik, but then it's not such an Avla to bury him next to the Tzaddik, whereas here his body was still intact.
What do they call it? Likut
HaTzomot? Likut HaTzomot, when they gather up the bones and bury them elsewhere.
We don't do it anymore.
But
I know why they do it, because the guy now is a Tzaddik.
Maybe that
could put him in a better burial.
Could be. Anyway. Okay, so therefore, so we see that you don't bury a Rasha next to it.
So wait a minute. When you have mixed cemetery...
What do you mean mixed cemetery?
You have male and female? Section of a cemetery that's for Yidden, and then...
For Goyim, that's a whole different issue. That you need to have, you definitely need to have separate parts. You need to be separated by a fence at least. Some of the posts can want to say it has to be separated by several amas of empty space, whatever, yeah. But that's, we're talking about among Jews themselves. Okay. Amalei Rapapa. So Rapapa says, who says that the reason why this guy revived is because he's a Rosha and he doesn't deserve to be buried next to Elisha? The Dilma Le'ikyuma V'hina Pishnayim Berucha Chaylai. Maybe this was part of the fulfillment of right before Eliyahu went up to Shemayim. Elisha, going along with him, says, I want to have a double portion of your Ruach. In other words, I want to be able to accomplish twice as much as you did. And Eliyahu tells him, fine, if you're able to see my histalkos, then it shows that you're given that power Min HaShemayim. And sure enough, he did. He saw as Eliyahu is being taken up into Shemayim alive. So they and tackle what happened is that among other things, Rashi mentions on the Pesukim over there, Eliyahu, if there's 8 Nisim that he did that are recorded, Elisha, there are 16. But in particular, we find Eliyahu was Mechayim Nisim once, namely the Ben Ishat at Tzorfis, the son of a lady that he was staying by in Tzorfah during a famine. So therefore, by Elisha, it had to be twice. So one time we know is the Isha Shunamis, that Torah, Parshas Vayera. Maybe this is the second one in order to be Mekayim. That therefore he needed to be able to be Mekayim Mason a second time. What
happened?
It was the Isha Shunamis. We know the story. It's an Torah Vayera that he stayed by her whenever he came to visit in town. He stayed by her and they made a special room for him. Hello. And then later on, she's childless. So he gives her a bracha. She should have a child. And the later on, the child is a few years old. And suddenly he gets a heat stroke or something and dies. And to make a long story short, Elisha comes in and Mechayim Mason him, yeah, and revives him. So maybe this was the second time that Elisha asked to be Mechayim Mason. Amalei, so he answers him. The Gemara doesn't say who answered, by the way. In other, there's Gersois, and in other places, it's whole in this Gemara. It's also brought, it says that Abaya is the one who Rapapa is discussing this with. So he answers him, Ihochi, if you're just going to say that in order for Elisha to be able to be Mechayim Mason a second time, Hainu D'Tanya, then what about this that it says in a Braisa, Al Ragle Omer L'Vesai Loholach, this guy, the pasuk says he stood up on his feet, but he didn't go any further. He didn't go home. He died right there on the spot, but not in Elisha's caver, so he's not buried next to Elisha. So therefore, that's not tchisa meisim that he should just revive for a couple of minutes.
He just died up long enough.
Just long enough.
Elisha was fathered by him.
Exactly. So that's not the kiyum of the second time. Mind you, this gemara is going according to the. Nevertheless, but it's not considered, you can't consider it a kiyum of tchiyas amazing. That with that said, by the way, there was a medrash in Pirkei Avot, but the other has a different understanding of it. This guy Taka was a tzaddik, and he had the tzchus as a reward for his tzchus in giving tzedakah, I think it was, or whatever. He had the tzchus for actual tchiyas amazing. Okay, but our Gemara doesn't go like that. Ella vihina pishnayim hechem ashkachatla. Fine, da'achya. So where, Taka, do you find that Elisha revived two Mesim? If you're going to say that this guy is not considered a second case of Mesim, then who was? Amalei. So he answers it. Amalei Rabbi Yechanan. So Rabbi Yechanan answers, Shiripi Tzarat Naaman. Namely, that Elisha healed Naaman's Tzarat after the Parsha Sazria. Shishkula Kemet. Now, Tzarat is almost like death. Fine. It's similar to death. Dichtiv al nok tihi kamet. As it says, when Miriam got Tzaraas, please let her not be like a dead person. So therefore, if he healed him from Tzaraas, that is the equivalent of being Mechayim. No, Naaman was a guy. He was later on, and we'll see, he actually became a Ger Toshev after this. But still, the fact that he healed him of Tzaraas means it is the equivalent of Chesed. Okay. Now, continuing. Shem Shein Kovin Rosha Eitzel Tzadik. Now, just as the din is that you're not allowed to bury a Rosha next to a Tzadik, Kach Ein Kovin Rosha Chomer Eitzel Rosha Kal. The same way you're not allowed to bury a worse Rosha next to a lesser Rosha, and therefore, that is why, for example, you can't bury somebody who got Skila, which is a harsh punishment, which is for some of the worst Averas, like Avodah Zarah and whatever. You can't bury him next to, let's say, somebody who had Hereg or Chenek, which are, so to speak, lighter Averas, lighter punishments. So, well, so wait. So therefore, okay. So the question is, Beliskun Arba Kvaris, in that case, we should have 4 burial plots, one for the people who got Skila, one for Srefa, one for Hereg, one for Chenek. And the Mishnah said you only have 2, one for Skila and Srefa, one for Hereg and Chenek. The answer is, yeah, Shnei Kvaris, Gemara Gemiri Lot. Yeah, this that we have 2 sets of Kvaris, it's a halacha l'moshe Mishnah that it should be that way. Yes, the difference between Skila and Srefa is not great enough that you consider it a Rosh HaChomer versus a Rosh HaKal. They're both about the same level of Rosh. And therefore, they can be. And therefore, they can be together.
7 years apart.
No. Hold on. First of all, one particular that was actually in Shlosha Prakim of Rambam today, that it's true a Beis Din shouldn't be so hasty to execute. They have to take all possible precautions to prevent it. First of all, you have many Bati Dinim in Eretz Yisrael. Between all of them, you can have lots of different executions. But besides that, also, even the Rambam says, first, if it happens, all the evidence checks out or whatever, and it happens that one day after another, you have to have 2 people judged, fine, that's what you do. It's a Beis Din Chavlonis, okay, it's a Beis Din Chavlonis, but that's how it is. You know, Lahavdil, and you know, sort of like, you know, with the flood this last week in Houston, you know, they call it a 100-year flood. Doesn't mean that it's not going to happen in the next 100 years. You could have another one like it tomorrow, in principle. All it means is statistically, you know, you're going to have it. Okay. So now we're going to go on to a side topic, which is going to end up getting back to our subject over here of the Rishoyim and the people who are executed by Beis Din, and at what point is there, how is their kapara accomplished? So first, the side issue. Omar Ula Amar Rav Yechanan. Ocho chelev v'hifrish korban. Suppose a person eats chelev. He sets aside an animal for a korban, because you have to bring a korban for that. V'heimir dosay. Then that person, Rahman al-Aslan, became a meshumad. Now, having become a meshumad, no korban can be brought on his behalf. Rashi brings from a pasuk that we say that a mumer is not able to bring a korban. Me'ama oretz, the pasuk says that a person from the ama oretz, from the people of land, can bring a korban, implying but not a mumer. A mumer is somebody who converted to another religion, or at least is worshipping of a dezara. Technically, actually, you can have a mumer can actually be, there can be such a thing as a mumer for one particular mitzvah. Like a person decides, kashrus doesn't apply to me anymore, let's say. He'd be a mumer for that particular thing. Hemir dosa, that we're saying over here, means like he shmad. Anyway.
But has no meaning. The person is always a Jew.
He's always a Jew, but nevertheless, as long as he considers himself a mumer, as long as he's acting as a guy, then he can't bring a korban on his behalf.
Yes,
the tshuva. Because of it, so now if he does tshuva, you still can't bring that animal on the korban. Once that animal has been pushed off, once it became invalid for a korban, because it can't be used as a korban as long as he's a mumer, then it remains nidche, it remains pushed off, and it cannot be used for a korban.
Can it be used for regular?
No, because it was designated as a korban. You probably have to wait till it develops a mum and sell it. And yeah. With that said, by the way, the halacha incidentally is not like that. The Rambam paskins the halacha that actually, if the guy does tshuva, then it is chozer v'nira, then it does become usable for a korban again, because there's gemaras in other places in Shas that talk about this concept. We have another opinion of Rav, I think, that says balei chayim ein nidche, and that living animals can never be considered nidche. They say a vort on it, by the way, appropriate for Elul, that we say a number of times in Slichas Laman Shimcha Hashem, but Salachta La'avoni Ki Ravu. Ki Ravu, the simple meaning is my averus are very great. They say, I don't remember where this vort comes from, but it means how can you forgive us our averus? L'chora, we are nidche, we did averus, and therefore we should be rejected ever from the Eivishter's presence, Chas V'Shalom. But Ki Ravu, because the Eivishter passed them like Rav, and because the halacha down here is also like Rav, Baalei Chayim ein nidche, and therefore a living creature, meaning even a person, can never be nidche, and therefore we always have a chance to do trouble. So L'chora, L'avin, Ki Ravu, because we go according to Rav. Okay, anyway. All right. Itmar Nami, then we have another statement, Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, Amar Rabbi Bo, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Ocho Chelev v'hifrish korban nishtata. What about a similar case, a person ate Chelev, set aside an animal for a korban, then he went crazy. Also, you can't bring a korban on his behalf. So the korban has to be brought l'ritzonoi, with his knowledge, with his consent. And a shoita doesn't have the ability, he doesn't have that. V'chotev nishtata, and later on he became healthy again, same thing, Hoyo v'nidcha yidcha. And the Gemara says it's tzricha. We need to be, Rabbi Yechanan had to tell us both these dinim. We couldn't have learned one from the other. Because if he only told us the first one, the case of the mumer, you would say the reason why it's possible, mishum de'iyo docha nafshi b'yadayim, because he himself actually did something to push himself off. He decided to go and be meimer dosa. He decided to go and shmadzich. Aval hai, but in the case of the shoyte, the mumela kodoch, he didn't try to do anything. It happened on its own. One day he had a stroke or whatever. You would say, maybe that's the equivalent of like when a person is sleeping. You don't say a person designated a korban one day and they went to sleep and it becomes dochui because you can't bring it while, or no, not talking about sleep while during the night, because fine, at night you can't bring korban on us anyway. Let's say he took a nap in the afternoon. You don't say the korban becomes possible because you can't bring it while he's sleeping. Tosis, by the way, says even actually Taka, if the guy is sleeping, you are Taka able to bring the korban on his behalf. If a person, for example, can send a korban in from another country to the Beis Mikdash, they don't have to call him up first to make sure he's awake before they bring the korban. He could be taking a nap at that time, but asleep is not the same as shoyta. Anyway. So you would think, therefore, shoyta might be considered like a sleeping person. So maybe, therefore, you would think the korban is kosher once he becomes normal again. And on the other hand, if we were only told about the case of the Shaita, you would say the difference is the reason why it's Nidcha Mishum De'en V'yadi Lasser, because he has no ability to undo it. He can't make himself normal again. Aval Hossam, but in the case of the Mumud, V'yadi Lasser, he always has the ability to do Tshuva. Eimalo, you would think maybe it's not considered Dochi Tzricha, and that's why we need both. That's why we need both cases. Amar Rav Yechanan. So now here's how, now eventually here's how we're going to connect it with our sugya over here. Amar Rav Yechanan. Hafanan nami tenena. So Rav Yosef says, yes, as a matter of fact, we can prove these dinim of Rav Yechanan on the basis of a follow of the Mishnah that says as follows, towards the end of the Masechta. It told in the last parak of the Masechta, in the last couple of dafim, it talks about the dinim of Irani Dachas. Now we know, as we've discussed before, all the property in the Irani Dachas has to be destroyed. So the question is, what happens to what's called Shlal Shamayim? What happens to all the things that belong to Hektish, that belong to the Eivishter, that are in there? On the one hand, they shouldn't have to be destroyed. The Pasuk only says that you have to destroy Shlala. It's spoiled, meaning anything that belongs to the people over there, not anything that belongs to the Eivishter. On the other hand, you can't actually bring these Karbanos because Zevach Rishoyim Te'eva, you can't bring Karbanos on behalf of Rishoyim like that, who are going to be executed as people of an Irani Dachas. So therefore, what happens with this? Hoyuba kachim. So if you have animals or things in the city that are kachim, so it depends. Kachim is be'ach. If they're kachim that were going to be brought on them as be'ach, for example, an oilo or shlamim or what have you, yamusu. You have to leave them to die. Meaning you can't actually kill them via dayim because they're far tekish. You can't bring them to the korban because zevach rishoyim te'eva. You put them in a room and nature takes its course. Kodshed vedek habayis yipadu, as opposed to if they're kodshed vedek habayis, meaning only the value of them was supposed to be given to Hektish, then what you do is yipadu, then you redeem them. Rashi over here learns that what it means is once you redeem them, then fine, they're motivana. They weren't shlala, they weren't the property of the Irani Dachas before, because they belonged to the Eivishter until they're redeemed. And once they're redeemed, then they're not shlala either, and therefore you can use them. The Rambam learns differently. The Rambam learns that once you pay to them, they do have to be destroyed. Whatever the case. Now in that sugya, in the last parak of our Masechta, we discussed this. Amai Yamosu. Lachora, why should we have to allow those karbanos to die? We should ask, Kivin de Iktur, once these people of the Irani Dachas have been killed, have the kapara, then at that point they have the kapara has been accomplished. The Liskula Gavaya, and those karbanos should be able to be brought, those animals should be able to brought as to be able to be brought as karbanos. Tosis, by the way, says an interesting thing over here, which is, you know, we start in the Mishnah over there at the end of the Masechta says the people of an Irani Dachas have no chelik lo lamabah, and yet here we're saying they have a kapara. So Tosfos says the difference would be if they don't end up getting killed properly as the members of an Irani Dachas, then they taka don't have a chelik lo lamabah. But if they get executed, then we said before they say vidui beforehand, then they do get a chelik lo lamabah.
All depends.
It all depends on how and when whether they said their vidui first. Anyway. So the question is, therefore, so in that case, they have their kapara. These kavanas should be able to be brought. Fine, but let's say it's an. That's why Rashi says, let's say it's an oilo or shlomim. An oilo or shlomim can be brought after the guy's death. Fine, you're right. If it was a chatos, you can't. Chatos shemeis baalel has its own dinim anyway. You have to put it in a room regardless.
How would you feel about such a high level that they were bringing the kavanas and chatos?
Doesn't matter whether they were or they weren't. The point is, yeah.
Why are they being idle?
Okay, doesn't matter anyway. Okay, now, lav mishum jamin and hayov nidchu yidchu. So Rabbi Yosef says, must be. Why would we say you can't bring these animals as korbanos? Must be like Rabbi Yechon is saying, because hayov nidchu yidchu. Once they were temporarily, once at some point they were possible to be brought as korbanos, because their owners were still alive and were shayim and zevach shayim tayeva. Therefore, even after they're dead, it doesn't become available. It doesn't become usable again, which is what Rabbi Yechon was saying about the mumur and about the shayta. Amalei Abaya, however, Abaya says to Rabbi Yosef, that can't be a proof necessarily. Mi sabrek mes mitzeh rishay havilei kapara. You're thinking that if somebody dies still a rosha, you're thinking his death itself is a kapara? No, mes mitzeh rishay lo havilei kapara. No, just because the guy died, but he was still a rosha, he didn't actually do tshuva beforehand, that doesn't accomplish him a kapara. So that's what I was saying before with the Yad Raman, the Minchas Chinuch talk about that. So you could say, fine, he has a chelik lo mabal, osed lavoi. In the Eivishter's judgment, he'll have his chelik lo mabal. Down here, we don't know whether his tshuva was sincere or not. He said the words, tei miselti kapara or whatever. It doesn't mean that he really means it. We ourselves, down here, after for all practical purposes, consider him a rasha. Or at least, until the kapara has been completed, he's still a rasha to a certain extent.
It's not like shikha or tzedaka, where if you do it by accident.
No, no, vidui of course needs das. But besides that, we're saying even the vidui is only stage one of it, as the Gemara is going to end up saying. You still need a lot more than that. So anyway, so Abaya wants to say if the guy dies still a rasha, his death itself is not a kapara. And we know this, Rabbi says, the Tani Rav Shmaya, because Rav Shmaya taught a braisa as follows. When we say that a Kohen becomes Tomei for his family, for his immediate family relatives, Yachol Afilo Pirshu Avoyt Midachet Tzibur Yitama, you would think that even if his family, even if this particular member of his family, his parents, for example, Rashi says, left the ways of the Tzibur, for example, they became a Mumer, they became a Meshumad, you would think, nevertheless, maybe the Kohen should be Matama to them. No, Tamad Laimra, therefore the Pasuk says, Ba'amam. The Kohen only becomes Tomei for his relatives among his people, meaning Ba'osa Maisa Amav, only when his relatives are people who are acting like a Yid is supposed to act, not a Mumer. So therefore, now we're talking about the, what we're saying over here is they were Pirsha Midaka Tzibur and then they died. Abaya is saying, so you see, they're Misses, not a Kapara for them. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef, if you're trying to say that the vote is after these guys are dead, then it should be considered the equivalent of kapara, and therefore the korbanos should be able to be brought, and the only reason why not is hayov nitcha yidacha. No, you could argue they're still considered rishayim even after they were killed. Amalei Rava, mikomadamus nerig mitech rishay lemes mitech rishay. What are you comparing? Somebody who's killed as a rasha, who's killed an unnatural death, versus somebody who died naturally. Somebody who dies naturally, still a rasha, given to Orcha Kamaya, since he dies in the normal way, lo havi la kapara. Taka, you could argue, fine, you have a point based on Shmaya's braisa, that you can't consider that there was kapara, you still consider him a rasha, and therefore, for example, a Kohen, the son who's a Kohen, would not be able to be Matami. But if they were killed, and not just executed a basin, killed in any way, as we shall see, killed even as a rasha, given to Lav Ki Urche Mayas, since he died in an unnatural way, Habile Kapara. That should be considered a kapara for him. So yes, Rabbi Yosef's proof from the case of the people of the Irnidakas is a very valid proof, because they're being executed, and Lechura, you should say their korban ought to be usable again. The only reason why not must be because Rabbi Yochanan did not have Nitche Yidaka.
Depends on the animals themselves.
No, it depends on the people, whether they were killed or whether they died.
No, but I'm saying if they were killed, only because the animals cannot be reused.
That's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, right. Teda, and Rava says, in fact, you can prove this, you can see that this is so, because you have a capital in Tillim that starts off Mizmer La'asef, Alekim bo goyim b'nachosecha, Evishter, the goyim have come into your nachla, your heritage, your inheritance, Timu es hechol kapshecha, they made your holy hechol They left the dead bodies of your servants as food for the birds of the heavens. And the flesh of your chassidim is left for the animals on earth. So we have to ask, what's the difference between avadecha, my avadecha, my chassidecha? What must be the distinction between avadim and chassidim? Lav chassidecha, chassidecha mamash. Shouldn't we understand it that it means chassidecha means literally the chassidim, in other words, the people who didn't do avedus in the first place? Avodecha would be Hanach de Machayvi Dinah de Mikara. Avodecha would be the people who originally were Chayav Misa for the Avedas that they did. The Kivan de Iktor, but once they're killed, Korulu Avodecha. Then the Pasuk calls them your servants, the Avedas' servants. So we see that the fact that they were killed in an unnatural way is a kapara for them, even though in life they were not dead. Not necessarily even was their victory. We're assuming that. Amalei Abaya, Abaya says, fine. Mikomadamis harugid malchus harugid piskin. Fine, but how are you comparing? You're talking about people who are killed by the Goyish government, like these people in Capital Ayim Test, who were killed by the Babylonians or the Romans or whatever. How are you comparing them? Harugid Beistin. How are you comparing them to people from the Irani Dachas who were executed by Beistin? Harugid malchus. Fine, I agree with you. Kivin d'shalayim didn't commitly, since they're being killed without a proper judgment, they're just being killed because the goyim hate them or whatever. Fine, havi lo kapara. Fine, I can agree that's considered a kapara. Harugid beistin, on the other hand, when they're executed by beistin, kivin d'bedin commitly, since beistin is executing them only, there's a proper judgment involved. There's a whole procedure over here. It's not just at random. Loi havi lo kapara. On the face, you could argue, Abaya says, in that case, just their death itself cannot be considered a kapara. And here's where we get to where this comes into our Gemara over here. Teda, I can prove it to Tan, because we learn in our Mishnah. Loi ho yukovir nois of the kibra sabbisov. We said in the Mishnah that a person who was executed by Beis Din is not buried originally in his family plot. If you're going to tell me, you rover, that as soon as they're killed, whether by Beis Din or whether by the Goyim, they immediately have a kapara, likbaru, why shouldn't they be able to be buried in their family plot right away? They have their kapara. The answer is, miso kvura. Fine, but it's not just enough. I agree it's true that once you need both. You need the misa and you need the kvura. The combination of those things. Rashi says im nikvura mechaperes misas and aleihem. If they're buried, then their misa would be a kapara for them. So therefore, in other words, by the Harugi Beis Din, so therefore we want to have them, eventually they'll be buried in their family plot, but we still need a process of kapara over here. Therefore, we don't have them buried with their family plot yet. Eventually they'll have their complete kapara, and then at that point they can be buried with their family. But it's different when they're killed by Goyim, and we see over here, by the way, Abaye agrees to this. So by the way, it's interesting, in Shulchan Aruch it brings, what if you have, for example, Meshulad, Rahman al-Islam, who ends up getting killed by Goyim? Do you take a sit shiva for him? Do you do for him the regular things you do for Mason? On the one hand, he was Meshulad. On the other hand, he was killed by Goyim. You know, we all know of stories like that from the Holocaust and from other times in Jewish history. So that Amar brings an opinion, and the Shach says this is Taka the Halacha, that yes, on the basis of our Gemara, yes, just the fact that he was killed by Goyim itself, Harugi Malchus itself is a kapara for him. He was a Meshulad, he was a lowlife, this, that, the other, doesn't matter. Harugi Malchus, and this is where you get the famous expression that we call them Kedoshim. Yeah. It comes from our Gemara over here. That's a different story.
In this opinion, they also have to be buried in order to get their full kapara.
So that's what we're saying over here. We're going to say there's going to be even more. The body has to decay. But yeah.
Okay.
No, with Harugi Malchus, no. The Harugi Malchus was saying that when they're dead, apparently, is a kapara by itself. We talked about this morning about the whole question about do they actually need, if they don't get buried in the end, is that a good sign for them? According to the simple meaning of the Gemara, maybe, but according to the Shiltas, no. But we talked about the difference between Tzaddik and Bein and Nimer Shoyim. Yeah, we were talking in general, the question,
yeah.
But yeah.
How many urine inductions is in that row, or do you need all of the people?
You need most of the people to be inducted. Doesn't matter, they still get, well, I mean, the property of the urine inductions gets destroyed anyway, but you were talking about animals that belong to the Rishoyim. You were talking about Kavanas that belong to the Rishoyim. By the way, you know, I mean, many of us, I think, are familiar with the famous sticha that the Rebbe talked about right before the first Gulf War, where there was a certain well-known Rosh Hashiva who was talking about how the Holocaust was a punishment for the Averis of the Jewish people, and there's going to be another Holocaust if everybody doesn't do it. And we all are familiar with the sticha that the Rebbe spoke over there on Sotah B'Tavis, where he screamed against it, that no, the people who were killed at that time are Kedoshim, and that also fits very well with the Gemara we're saying over here.
Who was that Rosh Hashiva?
He was a certain Rosh Hashiva in Bnei Brak.
It wasn't
a Victor. Come on.
Everybody knows it.
Okay.
The answer is that
we don't have to. The Eibishter doesn't expect us to justify. The Eibishter expects us to complain. We understand. The Eibishter has his reasons, but we still complain. Okay, new thing. Onward. Okay. All right. Moisiv Rav Adaba Abba, so Rav Adaba Abba says, fine, but I have a contradiction to that. If you're telling me all you need is Misa and Kvura, but our Mishnah continued, Loihoy Mis Ablin, we said that the family members of the person who was executed don't sit Shiva for him, they don't do Avelis for him, Ela Oninin, they just do Aninus for him, Shein Aninus Ela Vale, because Aninus is just something in the heart, meaning it's not something you can really control.
Implying that
they don't do Avelis. Now, the Isaka died of given the if for having a little kapara. If you're going to tell me as soon as the guy's buried, then they have a kapara, the ablu, then shouldn't they do avelus? Now, you know, what we're saying over here, by the way, is we're not talking about at the time. I mean, obviously they don't do avelus right away because he hasn't been buried yet. We're saying they only bury him temporarily in the spot. So first of all, it could mean that. There is actually, Rashi mentions over here, based on the next line of Gemara, that actually, What we say is if they weren't able to prava avelos at the beginning when the guy was first executed, then they're not going to do it afterwards either. Which is actually, let's see the answer of the Gemara, and then we'll talk about that. So if you're going to tell me as soon as they're buried they have a kapara, liablu, why shouldn't they do avelos as soon as the guy is buried, even in the temporary plot? The answer is b'inanami equal bosa, because you need another stage for him to have his kapara. You need that the body, you need that the flesh should decay. Dekanami, in fact, we can see that. Because we can see dekanami. In fact, we can see that from the wording of the Mishnah. Dekatani, because the Mishnah continues, so once the flesh is decayed, they gather up the bones, then they can bury them in their family plot. Shmamina, that proves it, that only at that point is the kapara finished. Only at that point is the kapara finished, and therefore you can, and therefore now you can bury them with their family. Now you don't have the problem of kovin rasha etzotzadik. So there is a machloikus. Rashi over here begins with the idea, and then various other Rishonim talk about the question. So do we say, fine, we say they don't prava avelos at the beginning. Do they do it at some later point? On the one hand, maybe you could say, on the basis of a similar idea, hoyo v'nidhu, which actually the Gemara itself is going to bring that point up in a minute, in Ravashi's answer, that maybe we say hoyo v'nidhu, once they were pushed off, they couldn't do it at the time because there wasn't yet the complete kapara for this guy who was killed, because he was a Rasha after all. Maybe, therefore, they never prava avelos. Or maybe not. Maybe after the fact, maybe they do.
What's
so there's different opinions among the Rishonim. Yeah. Ravashi. Shmamina, so that proves that indeed you need the ikko boster, you need the decaying of the body to be the final stage of the kapara. Ravashi, Ravashi says, here's a different way of looking at it. Avelos me'emesai kamaschelot mistimasa goylo. After all, when usually does avelos begin? As soon as the goylo is closed. Rashi over here and in many other places explains that the goylo is the top of the aron. So you bury a person in an aron, you bury a person in a coffin, you put on the lid of the coffin. That, Rashi says, is called the goylo. Once that lid is put on, then that's when the dinim of avelos begins. Tosfos over here and in many other places argues that no, the cover of the aron itself isn't the goylo. Rather, Tosfos learns the goylo is like a stone that you put on top of the on top to close off the caver. In modern terms, we don't put stones on it. We put a matseva later, but that's a different thing. A matseva is something else. We call it nefesh later on in our Gemara. So according to Tosfos' understanding, stimas ha-goylo, the equivalent of stimas ha-goylo nowadays would be when they finish shoveling the dirt into the grave over there.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah.
I thought that Tosfos meant to say the
book. No, there's no.
Oh, okay.
Fine. So anyway, so usually when does avelos begin? Usually as soon as the goylo is put on. Kapara me'emes ha-kahavya, on the other hand, when does the guy have his kapara accomplished? Mikichazu tzaira de kivra purta. Maybe fine. According to Ravashi, you don't need the full thing that the body completely decays, but you need at least that there should be some tzar of the caver. They see their relative in the caver. Some of the Mephoshim talk about the idea that tzar of the caver might mean chibot akever, that we know.
See their relative from the caver.
No, they see him being buried. They see him being buried. They see their relative who was just executed being buried.
So the point is that they see him.
Okay, so Rashi actually says fider de chibot akever purta. You don't need to wait for ikol abasa, but you need at least chibot akever. You need at least they see that there's a little bit of tsar that after the person is buried, usually you have by many people, you have chibot akever, a certain punishment for the neshama. You don't see it, but the point is once you have that happen. Once you have, when you feel it, whatever. So once you have that happen, then fine.
The buried or the...
No, chazur is dating. The pashtus means a mess. Pashtus would mean a mess, yeah.
Okay.
So no, once the mess sees this, then that's when he has his kapara. But the point is, in other words, that's not right after the stimas ha-goylo, because you have some time in between. It takes a little time for chibur da-kever to get accomplished. So therefore, once they were pushed off, once they could not prava avelos at the beginning because his kapara wasn't completed yet, therefore we don't do it later on. So according to the opinions, by the way, so what's the difference between Ravashi's explanation and the previous one? So again, according to the opinions that the first explanation was saying that you could prava avelos for them afterwards, later on, after ikol abasar, then Ravashi is saying that not. According to the opinion that even the first one is saying that, then Ravashi is basically just restating it in another way. As you say, and it's not a question of the stages of kapara, it's just a matter of hoyo v'nidchu yudachu. Once it was not able to be done at the beginning, then it can't be done later on as well. Rashi, by the way, points out an interesting point over here. What about, for example, a person has a relative passed away during Chol HaMoed? You don't prav avelos during Chol HaMoed. You don't say hoyo v'nidchu yudachu. You don't say that the guy never sits shiva. The difference is, Rashi says, because there are aspects of avelus that do apply during kol hamoed, so people still can come to be menachem avelim. So therefore, you can't say that the avelus hasn't begun at all. You can't say hove nitsa yidaka. Different other Rishonim talk about different. Doesn't matter, but at least some of it. Different other Rishonim talk about different other angles on it, including that we're talking over here, the avelus can't happen because of dinit, because the mess himself is not somebody who you're supposed to have avelus for, as opposed to, for example, let's say they talk about the case. What if, for example, a kid, Rahman al-Slan, I mean, imagine his parent passed away shortly before his or her bar bas mitzvah. They become bar bas mitzvah during the few days after that. Do they sit shiva then? So if you say hayol v'nitcha yidacha, you would have to say that no, they don't. But on the other hand, if you say that there's a distinction there, the mess themselves is worthy of sitting shiva for, just the kid themselves wasn't chayiv in it yet. Fine, but now they're a gadol and they are chayiv in it. So it's not the same kind of thing. That's the point. So when we say hayol v'nitcha yidacha, we don't necessarily mean it as a general statement that any time shiva cannot be done at the beginning, that it's never done. We mean specific cases like these. So the question is, according to Rav Ashi, if you're saying all you need is tzair of the kibra purta, you need a small amount of tzair in the grave, in that case, ihochi lomali ikobal. So then according to Rav Ashi, why do you have to wait until the flesh is completely decayed before you rebury the bones? The answer is mishum deloy epsha, because you can't do it otherwise, because once the guy starts decaying, they can't go away with it. It's not practical to go and move him at that point. Necessarily, then at that point, they're going to have to wait until the full process is done and all that's left is bones. So that's the maskana, therefore, is that the maskana, therefore, that we get out of this whole sugya is that the haruge based in, they do eventually have their kapara, but it's a multi-stage process, and therefore that's why we said that ultimately that's why you can't bury them originally in their family plot. First of all, because the whole process, because the whole process, the death and the burial and the ikul vasar, or koin teravashi, tzaira dekev reperta, is all necessary for the kapara. Only after all of that has been accomplished can you call the guy enough of a tzaddik to be buried with his relative, and therefore that's why until then he has to be buried in based in the plot.
And none of this applies to
Haruge Malchus. None of this applies to Haruge Malchus. We say Haruge Malchus, their death itself, the fact that it was an unnatural death by Goyim itself is their kapara. New topic. Here we're going to talk about, in this next sugya, which goes on for the next daf and a half or so, we're going to talk about the various dinim that have to do with having hana from something from a mess. So the mess himself is also bahana, as we will see later on in the sugya. Things that have directly to do with the mess, such as the tachrichim, are also bahana. So now we're going to figure out what exactly is and isn't also bahana. So kivre de Rav, the kever of Rav, habushakum in Ephra, people used to take dirt from that kever leishosabach yoma to heal a one-day fever. There's various kinds of fevers or malaria or whatever where the fever comes back every so often. Here, this was a particular serious time. The people were actually says, on the first day of a fever, they would take the dirt and I guess they'd put it on the person who was suffering the fever as a sgula to heal him. The question is that allowed? Also, Omer Leva Shmuel. So people came and told Shmuel, is that allowed or not? On the face of it, is it allowed? Are you allowed to take dirt from a caver? Are you allowed to take dirt from a caver? Isn't it also bahana? Amalahu yos avim. So Shmuel tells them, no, they're doing right. That's fine what they're doing. Kauka olamhu, because this is kauka olam. This is land this is part of the land, part of the earth that belongs to the whole world. But kauka olam ain't an aseret. The land that belongs to the world can't become also. It doesn't matter whether it's tamei. We're not worried about tamei b'tar. That's a different issue. But even if it's tamei, so what?
Not talking about
Rav is a tzaddik. Yeah.
No, Rav is.
Yeah, but that's what we're talking about. But no, we're not worried about. We're not dealing with the issue of tamei b'tar. This is in Babel. That people weren't nizim in tamei b'tar in Babel anyway. But the whole eretz ha'amim is tamei midrava. No, we're talking about the question: is it also b'hanar or not? So Shmuel tells them, this is dirt can never become also. Dichtiv, because we have a pasuk describing when Yeshayahu was getting rid of all the avodah zarah in Eretz Yisrael. It describes how he took an asherah tree and burnt it. And he threw the ashes of it on the graves of the people, meaning the people who had worshipped this asherah while it was alive. Now he threw the ashes on there as a bezoyan to them. So the point is the makish kever bnei am lavodis kachavim. So therefore we learn from that we make a hekesh between the kvarim of the people and avodah zarah. namely, ma avodas kachavim b'mechubur le'mitzra, just like when it comes to avodah zarah. Something attached to the ground does not become osur. Let's say, for example, goyim decide to worship a particular mountain, the mountain itself does not become osur.
Because it's attached.
You're not allowed to bring. You're not allowed to use it for gavaya. You're not allowed to take stones from that mountain and use them for the mizbeach, for example. But for head use, it's fine.
Even if it's their own mountain.
What?
Even if it's their own mountain.
What do you mean their own mountain?
Their own mountain.
Their own mountain. Yeah, even if it belongs to them. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Dichtiv, and we know that because the pasuk says Ashatim Yoshim Oisim Asalakeim Alaharim, because the pasuk says you have to destroy the people who you're coming to take over the land, the Canaanim. You have to destroy their gods that are on the mountains, Alaharim Aramim, on the high mountains, implying Alaharim Elakeim Balayaharim Elakeim, implying only the idols that are on the mountains have to be destroyed. But if the mountains themselves are their gods, you don't have to worry about that. So therefore, the mountains don't become osur. Hachanami. So the same thing over here. B'mechubur le'mitzah. The same thing over here. The dirt that's attached to the ground does not become osur b'hanah. Now there is a major. Machlokes Rishonim. What about, for example, let's say the dirt. Now, for example, if you have, let's say, so you have stones from the ground. Fine. If a person worships that stone while it's still in the ground, it won't become osur b'hanah. But if, let's say, you take the stone and use it to build a building, that can become osur b'hanah. What about over here? What about, for example, the dirt that you dig up in that you dig up to open up the grave? Later on, you shovel it back in. It was dirt that was detached from the ground and then reattached. Is that maybe included? Is that included in this or not? You have Rishonim on both sides of the issue. Some of the Rishonim say in that case, yes, that would be also, because the fact is it has tfisat yidei adam. It has human involvement in it. So therefore, according to them, the Gemara over here would have to be talking about dirt that wasn't moved like that, like just dirt from around the cave or whatever. According to some of the other Rishonim, no, it doesn't matter. Either way, it's moved because it was. Because they say originally it was part of the dirt. Originally it was part of the dirt. The fact that now it's back in the dirt, the fact that temporarily it was removed, the shovels, doesn't matter. Both opinions are brought in Shulchan Aruch.
And the halacha is,
since you have two opinions, the Shulchan Aruch, then you gotta be machmir, but we don't have a higher authority to appeal to. Again, we need Hashiva Shiftayach Kvarishon, Hashiva Shiftenuk Kvarishon, Yatzenuk Matchila. Right now, we don't have that. Okay. Anyway, so therefore, so Shmuel says it's fine for them to take this dirt. By the way, I came across something. There's apparently a whole sefer on different segulos that you find in different Sfarim, and they mentioned that, for example, they did the same thing in the city of Nezhin in the Ukraine. They used to do the same thing with the dirt from the Mitzvah of Ebbes all over there. Same idea. They'd use it for fever. They'd use it as a segula for fevers.
It must go worse.
I guess. I don't know. Okay. Fine. Macy, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction to this idea. A Braisa says, a choitz of kever law. The Braisa says, if a person digs out a kever for his father after his father died, Rashi says, that's important because later on in the sugya we're going to get into that issue. So at this point, by the way, the Gemara doesn't know. Later on, we're going to discuss in the sugya, which we may get to today, we may get to tomorrow, we'll see, that when we say his father means specifically his father for reasons of kibbutz out. Right now, the Gemara doesn't know it yet. Right now, the Gemara is assuming that it's just a regular din having to do with digging a kever. So, hachoitz of kever lov, v'holach u'kvorim v'mokam acher, in the end, he ended up burying his father someplace else. He, the son, is never allowed to be buried in that in that caver because it becomes also b'hana. So therefore, l'chora, then you see that even the dirt that's attached to the ground, the caver, the open caver, is still attached to the ground, and it becomes also b'hana, not like Shmuel says.
So the dirt was done?
No, we're not talking about the dirt that was removed. We're talking about the open hole. The open hole is not available to be used anymore because it's also b'hana. So we see that even that remains also b'hana on the face of it. The answer is Hochab Mayaskin and Bekeva Binyan. Fine, but the Braisa may not be talking about a hole that's dug into the ground. The Braisa may be talking about a building above ground. Now, we're not talking about, for example, we discussed yesterday, not burying a mausoleum, because you have to bury in the ground, but it doesn't have to be necessarily the mess doesn't literally have to be underground necessarily. You can have, for example, like a small thing of stones, like a couple of rows of stones or whatever, and the mess is buried inside that. That would be fine also. So that could be what we talked about. That was what we're talking about. So there you actually have stones that were dug out of the ground. There's no question they can be also b'hanah. Toshma, kever chodesh muta b'hanah. Another braisa says that a new kever, meaning that Rashi says you dug it so that eventually when somebody dies, you plan to use it for a kever. So therefore, that's muta b'hanah. So that's muta b'hanah because it wasn't done for a mess, and only if it's done for a mess does it become osur. Hitl by Nafel, but if you threw a stillbirth, a baby that was born that was born dead, Rahman Luslan, or then it becomes Asabana. So Lachora, again, you see that we're talking about a grave in the ground, and as soon as you use it for a mess, it becomes Asabana. And again, the answer is Hachanami the cave of Binyan. You could answer the same thing, that we're talking about one that's built a little bit above ground. We're not talking about a hole in the ground, but rather a structure slightly above ground. Again, you had to use stones to build it, so there's no question once it's used for a mess, it becomes Asabana. Fine. Toshma. Let's prove from another Braisa. A Braisa says, Nimtza after Omer, it comes out, the Braisa says, Sholosh Kvarim. You have three different kinds of Kvarim that have different halach. Kever on Nimtza, you have a kever that you find. For example, you own a field, and you find all of a sudden one day you find a kever in there. You never gave permission for anybody to bury in there. So all of a sudden you found that there's a grave there that you didn't know about. Yeah, it's a Gzela, exactly. Kever HaYadua, you have second of all a kever that you knew was there, that for example was buried there with your permission. Or kever HaMazik HaSarabim, the third kind is you have a kever that's mazik to people. For example, buried, let's say, under, the person is buried, let's say, under a public road or whatever, under the Shul Sarabim, every time people are walking over, they're becoming Tomei. So what are the dinim? It's like this. Kever HaNimtza, a kever that's found because it was put there illegally, you never gave permission for it, mutl lefanoseh, you're allowed to clear it away, you're allowed to take the mess and rebury him elsewhere. And pinahu, if you buried him elsewhere, mekomo tahor, then the place where he was buried before is now tahor, it's not matamim mess anymore, umutl b'hanah, and you're allowed to have hanah from it because the mess was never, he was never kona mekomo, he never established the the point is, in other words, like this, you have usually a person, so to speak, owns the place where they were buried. But mitzvah is another thing. We're going to talk about that in a few lines. But a regular mitzvah, usually you're not allowed to move graves without a good reason. So you have, and by the way, there's many dinim about this in Shulchan Aruch. You have certain exceptions. For example, we know historically, we know there have been times when Kvarim have been moved, for example, when the Beit HaChaim was going to be destroyed by the Goyim or whatever. Yeah, the Rebbe Rashab is an example of that, yes. If L'Hatchila they only buried him here temporarily, then they're allowed to rebury him someplace else. There are dinim about reburying him in Eretz Yisrael, et cetera, but in general, you're not allowed to move a mess.
In 20 years, they have to move the mess.
In that case, in L'Hachila.
You allow them to bury.
So in L'Hachila, in that case, I guess it's made all tonight if you're only going to bury them there temporarily. You're talking about the Rebbe Rashab, by the way. When they buried him, it's brought Nashkab to the Rebbe, but they actually made a declaration that we're burying him here all tonight, that if we should be able to rebury him in Eretz Yisrael, we will do so.
And that's okay.
In this case, in the event, they had to remove him anyway because the Russian government decided to pave over the Beit HaKvaros, but as they did in many places in Russia. But they never moved him to Eretz Yisrael in the event, but they left that possibility open. So if it's done off tonight, that's different. Yeah.
The Chida was moved from Italy to Israel.
That's an example, yeah. You have a lot of examples. The Chida was buried in Italy, but eventually they moved him to Eretz Yisrael. Yeah.
Same reason?
No, there was a different reason. But anyway, whatever. One interesting thing, by the way, the Sefer Kolboy brings an interesting reason why not to move a mess. He says because you're going to scare the poor guy. He's going to think it's a Yom HaDin or something that he's being brought up for judgment.
Oh, my
gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. So, like this, though, Kevra Nimsa, again, you found it there one day where it has no business being there, so you're allowed to move it away. Pinohu, and once you moved it away, Mekoma Tahar, the place where it was is Tahar, it's not Matame anymore. Umutabana, and you're allowed to have Hana from that place because it wasn't considered a caver in the first place because it had no business being there. Also, some of the Meforshim say because the concept called Einodim Oysa Dover Shaina Shalay, I don't have the ability to ask for something of yours. Yeah. Okay. So that's number one. Kever HaYodua, on the other hand, a kever which is known, where it's known that it's there. Also Lefano, so you're not allowed to clear it away. Pino, but if you did clear it away, Mekome Tome, then the space where it was is Tome Midrabanan. The Rabanan declared that it should nevertheless remain Tome in order taka to prevent people from moving Kvarim, just like that. But also Bahanan, and it's also Bahanan. And the third kind, kever amazik asarabim, a kever that's causing harm to the rabim. Again, that every time they're walking on the sushasarabim, they're becoming tamei or whatever. Mutal afanai. So again, you're allowed to clear it away. Pinohu, and once you clear it away, Makayma Tahar, then the place is Tahar. However, it's still also Bahana. However, it's still also Bahana, because the difference is the fact that we consider it Tome afterwards, that's Xeder Dirabana, in order to prevent people from moving it. Here you're allowed to move it, so there's no reason for that Xeder. The also Bahana, that was something Daraisa. The Rabbanan have no ability to undo something Daraisa, therefore it remains also Bahana. So the point is, what? Also Bahana, I mean, you can't use dirt, you know, you can't use dirt from it or whatever. No, you fill it up with dirt so people can walk, but you can't use any dirt from it for any other purpose. So Lachora, we see that a kaver is also Bahana, so there's including the part that's in the ground. Now, again, not like Shmuel says. The answer is Hachanami the Kaver Binyan. You can answer that here also we're talking about one built above ground.
How do we know that?
If we have to assume, according to Shmuel, that would be the only explanation.
We make it fit to Shmuel.
Yeah. So if we don't want to contradict Shmuel, and the halacha, after all, is like Shmuel, if we can't find a contradiction to him, then the halacha is going to be like him. In this case, we don't have to say the braita is a contradiction to him. So that's it. That's what it means. Cave of Binyan. It's true that if it was below ground, then the spot would not actually be also Bahana. By the way, it's worth mentioning, although without getting into too much detail, that the Rambam has a whole different gerusa of this braita. The Rambam actually understands, and the Mefarshim have field day trying to understand what the Rambam is doing over here with it, because the Rambam's gerusa is basically that it's kind of the other way around. If you know that the kever is there, then the place is tahor if you move it. Whereas if you didn't know the kever was there, then the place remained tomei afterwards. It's just the opposite of the way we have it in our Gemara over here. And the reason, one reason is, a number of the Mefarshim, the Kesef Mishnah talks about, that the reason the Rambam may understand that a kever hanimsa means that you found it there, and therefore you have no way of knowing. Is the body whole? Are there pieces of it lying around or whatever? So therefore, are there maybe other kvarim in the area that you need to check for or whatever? So therefore, you need to check that whole area and make sure there's no other pieces of bodies in that kever or any nearby areas or whatever before you can declare the area tar, where the kever ayadua, you can assume the body is still whole.
Well, that's like what was said in the Bambabasa.
We had over there the whole sugya. Yeah, we had over there the whole sugya about measuring 20 amas from one to the other. Yeah, it was a similar idea. Okay. Fine. Now, going back to, we have the case of kever animsa mutsa lefanose. So we said that if you find a kever unexpectedly in your field or whatever, you're allowed to clear it away. The question is, do a mes mitzvah? Why shouldn't we be concerned that this is a mes mitzvah, that this is somebody who there was nobody available to bury him, and a mes mitzvah kona makayma? And one of the tnoyim that Yeshua made when they came into Eretz Yisrael, and then they divided up Eretz Yisrael among the Shvatim, is that a mes mitzvah acquires the place where they're buried. So that's it. Even if you bury it in somebody's field, that's it. The mes mitzvah can't be moved from there. So how do you know this isn't a mes mitzvah? The answer is shiny mes mitzvah to color this. Like, the difference is a mes mitzvah, if people find a mes mitzvah, there's going to be a curl. It's going to be, everybody's going to hear about it. Yeah, it's going to be known. It's an unusual thing to find a mes mitzvah. So it'll get talked about and eventually it'll be found out. So if there's no curl, then you can assume it wasn't a mes mitzvah. Somebody just decided to bury there illegally, and therefore you don't have to worry about it. No, you don't have to. We're talking about Tanimsa, that you just woke up one day and found a burial in your field, and there was no curl, so you know it's not a mes mitzvah. So just go ahead and clear it away. Again, according to the Rambam, that kever nimso could mean something that you found there, that it might be hundreds of years old. Fine, but even so, okay, maybe they would put him up safe, but whatever. Still, people would tend to know these things. It's like, okay, you know, when you look like this, we're not used to it because you know we and you know. How many of us can say that we or our families have lived in the same place for even 50 years, let alone more than that? In those days, you know, people lived in the same place for hundreds of years. So you know, there's a certain community memory over there. You know,
how many of us are farmers?
This is also true. Yeah. Okay.
What's that?
How many of us are farmers? This is also true. Yeah. Okay. New discussion. Again, relating to the question of things that are also bahana of a man. It's fine. We have a discussion of Amoraim as follows. Ha'orig beged l'mes. If somebody weaves a garment for tachrichim for a mes after he dies, later on, at the end, near the end of the sugya, the Gemara is going to ask, when do you ever have that a situation like that anyway? Normally, tachrichim, or normally you always have a supply of tachrichim ready beforehand. You're not going to have the mes wait there, lying there over there, waiting while they weave tachrichim. So the Gemara will take that up at the end of the sugya. But meanwhile, this is the case. So you're weaving a beged for the mes. The question is, does that make it also bahana? Abaya ama also v'rova ama mota. Abaya says that makes it also right away, the fact that you wove it, having in mind the mess.
Is it or at the beginning?
No, I guess, well, no, once we'll see in the Gemara later, once usable for the mess. Then it's also bahana, Abaya says, and Rava says it's mutter until you actually use it for the mess. name. Abaya Omar also, Abaya says it also because it has mona, he says has mona milti. He says designating something for a certain purpose is considered something significant. So therefore, the fact that you designated this beged is going to be for the mess is the equivalent of having actually wrapped the mess in it already. It's sort of like milti. The Rav Amar Mutta has mona lav milti. He wears Rav says mutta because has mona doesn't count for anything until you actually do it. We'll see, by the way, as we go through the sugya, and there is a lot of discussion among the Rishonim about the exact parameters of this. There are some cases where hasmana, where hasmana is done together with a maisa, as we will see later on in the sugya, where there everybody agrees that's considered something significant. We'll see later in the sugya, if negeya, for example, let's say when you have a bag for tefillin, we'll see a bag for tefillin, you make it for the purpose of tefillin, but there's a time before you start using it for tefillin, and then there's a time after you start using it. So yeah, we'll see. Okay. My time of Abaya, what is Abaya's reason that he says that hasmona over here is considered something significant? The reason is Gama Shom Shom Me Egla Arufa. Tefillin is Xedo Shogar from the two words Shom between a mess and an Egla Arufa. By Miriam, it says, Vatomas Shom Miriam. By the Egla Arufa, it says that V'orfu Shom Es Egla Banachal. So therefore, he says, Ma Egla Arufa Bahazmona Mitzera, just like an Egla Arufa becomes Osir even before its neck is chopped, even as soon as they bring it into the Nachal Eisan, as soon as they bring it into the valley where it's going to be decapitated, already becomes Osir Bana. Ahainat Bahazmona Mitzera, so the same thing, anything having to do with a mess becomes Osir as soon as there is Hazmona, as soon as it's designated for it. Vidrava, Gomer, Shom Shom, Abedis Kachavim. Rava says, I agree with the words of the Kavachimer, but I'm using the other end of the Kavachimer, I'm taking someplace else. I'm doing a Xer Shava from Abedis Zara. Namely, Ma Abedis Kachavim. Namely, you have the Pasuk again by Miriam, Matamas Shom Miriam, by Abedis Zara, Asha Ogu Shom Hagoyim. So therefore, you have a Xer Shava between those two. Now, Ma Abedis Kachavim, Bazmano Loy Mitzra. Therefore, we can learn from that, just as an object does not become also for Avodah Zarah, does not become also as Avodah Zarah, just because it's designated for that purpose. For example, Rashi gives examples over here that we'll learn in Avodah Zarah in a few months from now, that's the shame. That let's say, for example, somebody says, I plan to use this house for Avodah Zarah. Doesn't matter. Ein hektish la Avodah Zarah. There's no such thing as hektish when it comes to Avodah Zarah. He has to actually start doing something with it for it to be also. So therefore, the same thing. The same thing over here. Verbally saying that I'm going to be using the thing for the mess doesn't count for anything. But that's what it is. Okay. Tosfos actually discusses later on in the sugya that given that we started off with the situation of you weaving it. It would mean, in other words, Tosfos says, and let's say, for example, you had a garment already woven, and you verbally say, I plan to use this for the mess. Even a buyer would agree that's not hasmona. According to Abaya, you have to have some mice involved. Many Rishonim disagree with that, and then some of them say you need at least a little mice. Some of them say you need a major. The mice is, well, the halacha is not like Abaya anyway. The halacha is like Rav. Okay, so the question is, with Rav, my time, like Gomer, my Eglah Rufa, Taka, why does Rav not want to learn from Eglah Rufa like Abaya does? The answer is Amalach, because Rav can answer you, Mishamshin, Mishamshin, Gamrin. It makes more sense to learn the Gzeta Shava of something that's used on behalf of something else, from something else, from another thing that's used on behalf of something else. The Tachrichim are used for the mess. That point is the Eglah Rufa itself. La Puki, Eglah Rufa, the Higufa Kedusha, as opposed to the Eglah Rufa itself has Kedusha. It's an intrinsic thing of its own, that its neck is chopped and so forth. Here, you're talking about Tachrichim for a mess. You're talking about an object for Avodah Zarah, as opposed to an Eglah Rufa, it's not for something else, it's for itself. That itself is the mitzvah. Abaya, my time of the government, Avodah Zarah. What about Abaya? Why doesn't he want to learn from Avodah Zarah like Rava does? Omaloch, because Abaya will answer you. Mide de Urche, Mide de Urche Gamrin. It's more logical to learn something which is usual from something which is usual. In other words, both Eglah Rufa, it's usual that if you have the case involving a body over there, then you're going to do Eglah Rufa. It's usual that you have a mess and you have Tachrichim. La Puka, but it's Tachavim, Galav Urcha, as opposed to Avodah Zarah. It's not the usual thing to do. Jews don't usually do that. So therefore, and Goyim even are also in it. So therefore, you could argue, in other words, Rashi says, so fine, you did Hasmona, you designated something for Avodah Zarah. Fine, the Torah is not going to say that's also because we expect that you're going to soon come to your senses and not actually use it for Avodah Zarah. as opposed to once you designate a calf for the Eglah Arufa and you bring it into the valley of it, that's it. You're going to go through with it. Once you designate Tachrichim for the mess, you're going to go through with it. Therefore, Abaye says it's more logical to draw an analogy between those two. Fine, but it's closer than Avodah Zarah, he says. So now we're going to have a discussion about this on the basis of various prices. Simon kofa nafshe dechatsiva nechita deumna. This is simon for five brises or statements or whatever that we're going to be discussing in this connection. There's actually more than five of them. There's actually eight of them in here. Why some of them are missing in the simon is one of those unanswered questions. Okay, mace. Well, yeah, Simon says mace. I have a contradiction on the basis of a mishnah. It says as follows. Now, we know there's a concept of the tumas medras. You have things that are able to become tamei by a zav sitting, leaning, or whatever on them. But those have to be things that are, first of all, they have to be royally yeshiva. They have to be something that you're suitable for sitting or leaning or whatever on. And second of all, it has to be something that's used, that it's something that it has to be that it can't be amoid v'nas malachteinu. It can't be something which its primary use is something completely different, where therefore if you were to use it to sit on, then the other people would tell you, get up, we need to use this for its primary purpose. When we learn the Mishnayos for a novel over there, the whole pair of Shlosha Tshifanein is based on these concepts. You have, for example, the first mission over there, the shields. You have the three-sided shield, which is Tamei Medras, because usual soldiers sleep on it during the night and while they're in the battlefield. The Shemasakin with the coin phone, the one that you use for fencing or whatever, a smaller shield. You can't really use it. It's not normal to use it for lying down. It's not meant for that purpose. The Ditzisabian, and they have that little one that the Arabs use when they're playing or whatever, is to hurt a miklum there because it doesn't really have any regular use at all, so it's not a kabbalah. Okay, so that's the concept. So Mishnah says in Kalim, Kippa Shu Tomei Medras, if you have a headscarf, which is Tomei Medras, because Rashi says sometimes, even though normally you put it on your head, but sometimes the woman may take it off and use it and spread it on a chair to sit on, or sometimes also while she has it on her head, she'll lean her head on something. So therefore it can become Tomei Medras. Un sanasu l'sefer, but instead she took this scarf, she took this head scarf, this tichel, and instead gave it to be used for a sefer Torah, for a mantle for a sefer Torah. Tahar min ha-midras, at that point it becomes tahar from the tumas midras that it had, even without toveling it.
Because for a mantle?
Yeah.
Because the use changes.
Because now the use changes, so now it's one of those amoid v'nasim alachseinu things. Now it's nobody would use it for sitting on anymore. No, apparently not. So it's no longer tummy. Even though it was tummy before, it now becomes tahar without having been toveled. No, they're right. We're talking about. How can it be? The fact is, it became medrash before because a zav sat on it or whatever, and now a zav or whatever sat on it, and now it becomes tahor just by being used for a sefer Torah because now you have a new ma'aseh involved. But yeah, Tosfos actually discusses over here the point, which is that Tosfos over here discusses the point, but doesn't come to a conclusion. Tosfos points out usually in order to make something no longer tamei, you'd need a shinui maisi, you'd need to do something different here. Elsewhere in Shabbos, Tosfos talks about the vort that because in this case there's the din that once it's used as a mantle for a sefer Torah, it becomes also ba'ana, that is considered enough of a maisi. You don't actually need to change it. You don't actually need to add some new decoration to it or whatever, because just the fact that you made it for a sefer Torah, which makes it also ba'ana, is enough to make
you
it.
You have to wash it, nothing.
Well, it would be a good idea to wash it, but that's not considered shinui maisa. Shinui maisa would be, for example, you cut it to size, you added decoration to it, you added belt to it or whatever. Okay. Anyway. So tohar min ha-midras, aval tomei maga midras, but the Mishnah continues over there. Still, it remains tomei to the extent of it's not an avatuma anymore, but now it's a rishon l'truma because it touched itself while it was a midras. Every part, every molecule of it, every thread of it touched the other thread. So therefore, now it's no longer tomei midras, but now it's the next level down of truma. It's a rishon l'truma. It's still, in order to make it completely tahor, you'd still need to toivel. So the point of it is, the point we're getting at over here is, l'chura nesanatu the sefer just means that she designated it for a sefer Torah. It wasn't actually placed on the sefer Torah yet.
Well, you
table
it whether it's
an avatuma, it can be the time of people who touch it. If it's a ladatuma, it can only be the time of food.
But you would still table it.
Practically speaking, you might, but yeah. By the way, the Rambam, by the way, has a different understanding of this din. The Rambam says we're not talking about actually Tumah Midrash. We just mean as a scarf, it's able to become Tumah Midrash. Once it becomes a mantle, it's not able to become Tumah Midrash anymore, but it still is able to become Tumah Midrash.
Right, and that explanation.
Even though it's no, it never actually became Tomei, but there's a question, what is it susceptible to? Again, like the three-sided shield versus the single-sided shield.
The Rambam's explanation is
really important
to all, both.
Yeah, right. Okay, so the question is that, the question is that we see Nesanatu L'Sefer L'Chura means that she just designated it to be used for a Sefer Torah, and we see already that changes its status, that works according to Abaya. What is Rava going to do with that? The answer is, Eman the Sanat of a Korachatu. Yes, you're right. According to Rava, it would have to mean not just that she designated it for a Sefer Torah, but she actually wrapped it around the Sefer Torah. That only then for sure, Rava would agree that's the equivalent of Tachrichim that were actually put on the mess. Then for sure, they become Osabana. So the question is, Lomali no Sanatu v'Korachatu. In that case, why do we need to? Why do we need that? In that case, why do you need to designate it at all? Just putting it on the Sefer Torah should be enough to make it Osabana. The answer is Kidr of Chista, because that would be similar to a Din of Chista then. The Amr of Chista, High Sudra, the Azmane of a Meitzabet Tfilin, if you have a scarf or a cloth that you designated for putting Tfilin inside, a Tfilin bag, in other words, but Sarbe Tfilin, and you actually put Tfilin inside that bag, also the Meitzabet Pshiti, then from now on, you're not allowed to put money into that bag, with or without the Tfilin.
What is it?
On the other hand, if you only designated the bag for the tefillin, but you didn't actually put the tefillin in it, or sorbei v'lo azmenei, or as an ad hoc thing, you just happened to one time wrap the tefillin in it, but you never designated it for that purpose. Shori l'meitzer b'pshitei, then you're allowed to put coins in it, because then it's not considered tashmishi kedusha of the tefillin yet. So according to Rav Chista's din, in other words, it would mean that. Therefore, that's why we would have to say that's why you need both. If she just wrapped it around the Sefer Torah, that wouldn't necessarily be enough to make it also b'hana. Wouldn't be enough to change its status. It has to be designated and wrapped around the Sefer Torah, which fits with you say verbally. I plan to use this for a mantle for the Sefer Torah. Or in this case, I plan to use these to wrap my tefillin. Ula Abaya Dharma Ahadu Mana Milsi. What about according to Abaya, who says that Hasmana is something significant? According to him, the din would be different. Asmane Apagablet survey. Then the din would be if you designated the bag of Tfilin, that itself would make it also to put coins into it. But survey, if you just put the Tfilin in, then it would depend. E Asmane in. If you designated it for that purpose, then yes. E Loy Asmane Loy. But if you didn't designate it, then not. Just putting Tfilin in it one time ad hoc doesn't make it also Bana. So you don't have a proof one way or the other from this Mishnah because you could understand that she designated it for the Sefer Torah but didn't actually use it yet. Or you could understand, like Rava, that you designated it and used it for the Sefer Torah. And then only then would it change its status. So no proof from that one way or the other. Toshma, come, let's prove from a Braisa. Nefesh, if you have a Nefesh, which we're trying to prove, either Rava or Rabbi, yeah. Nefesh. A nefesh is a building on top of a kever. In modern terms, basically, it would be matzeva. Shabnoi l'shem chai, if you built it having in mind a living person, that you plan to use it to bury this person after they die. Mutabana, so it's still mutabana. The Adrama has a different understanding of it. He says, let's say you made it for a chai. Let's say a person decided to build this building in order to live in. And eventually, after 120, he plans to be buried over there. Whatever. Since it was done while he was alive, and it's still motivana, but if you added to it even one row of stone that it having in mind to bury a mess in, osabana, then it becomes osabana. So therefore, you see, hazmana is something significant. You didn't necessarily put the mess in there yet, and still already you say it's also. The answer is hachamayasin and drama be mess. Yes, Rava would answer that we're talking about you actually did place the mess in there. The question is, in that case, why do you have to bother mentioning that he added a row? Kilo hoisif nami. And if you didn't add the row, it'd still be also, like we said before, a cave or a mess, yeah? The answer is, yes, but the chiddush of the braisa is, even if afterwards, so he removed the mess afterwards. He placed the mess in there for a while. Then he removed him. Nevertheless, though, the fact that in the middle, he added a dimus over there, having in mind the mess. There you have hazmana and you have maisa, and even Rava will agree that hazmana and maisa together is enough. So that would be the point. By the way, Rav Rambam Papa says in the name of Rav Chista, by the way, it's a side thing in this. Let's say you recognize which dimus it was, you recognize the particular row of stones that you added, then no problem. Then you can remove that row of stones, and then the rest of the building will be mutter, because all they added was that part. So therefore, and now that the mess is that, now that you remove the mess from there, so the rest of it is not also bano. Continue tomorrow, that's the shame. Yeah.